A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's got a friend in Israel dealing with the usual summer mosquito apocalypse, and the friend spotted one of those UV light trap things in a hardware store and asked if it's worth buying. Daniel actually tried a Dynatrap back in the US and says it did almost nothing. He's asking whether UV mosquito traps can actually work, whether chemical-based repellents are a bad idea if you've got asthma or a young kid, and what he should recommend instead. He mentioned he saw Nikor make something but doesn't know if it's any good.
Okay, there's a lot to pull apart here, and I love this question because the UV trap thing is one of those consumer product categories where the marketing and the science are basically living on different planets.
The short answer is no.
The short answer is mostly no, with a tiny asterisk that we should probably explain because otherwise someone's going to write in saying their cousin in Minnesota swears by one. But let's start with the core problem. What these UV traps are actually catching? There was a study out of the University of Florida's Medical Entomology Lab. This is the gold standard group for this stuff, where they ran a bunch of these traps over a summer and then identified every single insect they caught. Across something like 10,000 insects, mosquitoes made up less than 1%. The vast majority were midges, moths, beetles, harmless stuff. Midges in particular look a lot like mosquitoes to the untrained eye, so you empty the tray and see a pile of little winged things and think, wow, this thing is destroying the mosquito population. But you've basically committed midge genocide and the mosquitoes are still biting your ankles.
It's the mosquito equivalent of those weight loss ads where the before and after photos are just different people.
Different species entirely. And the reason gets at something really fundamental about mosquito biology that most people don't know. Mosquitoes are not attracted to UV light. They just aren't. They navigate primarily by carbon dioxide, body heat, and specific skin odors. Things like lactic acid, ammonia, certain fatty acids. A UV bulb doesn't mimic any of those cues. It's like trying to lure a shark with a salad bar.
Which explains why my leaf-based mosquito defense system never took off.
I'm going to pretend you didn't say that. But here's where it gets interesting. Some of the higher-end traps, including some Dynatrap models, do include a secondary lure. They'll have a little catalytic converter that produces small amounts of carbon dioxide, or they use octanol cartridges, which is a chemical that mimics the scent of mammalian breath. That's the asterisk. If the trap has an actual CO2 generator or a chemical lure, it can catch some mosquitoes. But even then, the efficacy is really limited. A review in the Journal of the American Mosquito Control Association found that these traps can reduce biting pressure in a controlled setting, but they almost never eliminate enough mosquitoes to make a meaningful difference in a real backyard. And they're expensive. The Dynatrap models that actually have the good lures run $150 to $200 or more.
Daniel's experience with the Dynatrap doing almost nothing. That tracks.
It totally tracks. Especially if he had one of the lower-end models that's basically just a UV bulb and a fan. Those are mosquito-themed nightlights. They're decor with a body count of the wrong bugs.
Alright, so UV traps are out. What about the chemical ones? The little plug-in liquid things with the replaceable bottles. Those are everywhere in Israel. Every hardware store, every supermarket, they're practically a cultural institution.
Right, so these are typically either mosquito coils, which you burn, or electric vaporizers that use a little heated mat or liquid bottle. The active ingredient is almost always a pyrethroid, usually alethrin, prolethrin, or transfluthrin. These are synthetic versions of pyrethrins, which are natural insecticides found in chrysanthemum flowers. The way they work is they volatilize into the air at low concentrations and basically create a neurotoxic zone for insects. They don't kill humans at these concentrations because mammals metabolize pyrethroids very efficiently, but for a mosquito with its tiny body mass and different metabolic pathways, it's lethal or at least highly repellent.
The asthma question.
This is the real concern, and I'm glad the prompt raised it. Pyrethroids, even at the low concentrations used in these devices, are known respiratory irritants for some people. There was a study in Environmental Health Perspectives that looked at indoor pyrethroid exposure and found an association with increased respiratory symptoms in people with pre-existing asthma. It's not universal. Plenty of asthmatics use these things without issues, but it's a real risk. The mechanism seems to be that the fine particulates and the chemical itself can trigger bronchial hyperresponsiveness. And for young children, the concern is twofold. One, the respiratory systems are still developing, which makes them more vulnerable to airborne irritants. Two, they have a higher metabolic rate and breathe more air per kilogram of body weight than adults, so their effective exposure is higher even at the same concentration.
If you've got asthma in a young kid, the risk calculus on these things shifts.
The EPA has reviewed these products and they're registered for household use, so they're not saying don't use them ever. But their own guidance suggests using them in well-ventilated spaces and not for prolonged periods. The problem is that to be effective, you basically need to run them all night in a closed room, which is exactly the scenario that maximizes exposure. It's a tension between efficacy and safety that the product packaging doesn't really acknowledge.
It's the glockenspiel of corporate approachability. Sounds gentle. Might still give you a headache.
I don't know what that means, but I agree.
What about the coils? People burn those on balconies all the time.
Coils are worse, actually. Burning a mosquito coil releases particulate matter, PM2.5, at levels that have been compared to smoking something like 100 cigarettes in terms of the fine particle load, depending on the coil. There was a study out of Taiwan that measured the particulate output of a single coil in a small room and found it produced PM25 concentrations that exceeded WHO air quality guidelines by a factor of 10 or more. For someone with asthma, that's a much bigger red flag than the electric vaporizers. The smoke itself is an irritant, never mind the insecticide.
The coil is basically a tiny, targeted air quality disaster with mosquito-killing properties.
That's a fair summary, but it's also the part that's hardest on your lungs.
Alright, so Daniel's instinct to avoid both the UV trap and the chemical vaporizers seems basically correct. What does that leave? What actually works?
Let's build a hierarchy. At the top, the single most effective thing you can do is physical barriers, window screens, bed nets. In Israel, a lot of older apartments don't have proper screens, or they have those roll-down ones that have gaps at the edges. Fixing those gaps with weather stripping or installing proper fine mesh screens is boring, unsexy, and more effective than any gadget. The CDC's first recommendation for mosquito bite prevention is always environmental control. Eliminate standing water, use screens, wear long sleeves. Everything else is supplementary.
Standing water in an Israeli summer. That's air conditioner drip lines, plant sources, the neighbor's neglected paddling pool.
Mosquitoes can breed in a bottle cap of water. It takes about a week from egg to adult in warm weather, so you need to be dumping standing water every 5 days or so. But let's assume Daniel's friend is already doing the basics and still getting eaten alive. The next tier is personal repellents. DEET is still the gold standard after 70 years, which is remarkable. Developed by the U.S. Army in the 1940s, extensively tested, and it works by confusing the mosquito's olfactory receptors so they can't lock onto your scent. Concentrations between 20 and 30% are the sweet spot. Higher concentrations don't repel better, they just last longer. 20% DEET gives you about 4 to 5 hours of protection. It's safe for children over 2 months, according to both the CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics, though you want to avoid hands and faces on infants because they'll put everything in their mouths.
The asthma question with DEET.
DEET is not a respiratory irritant in the same way pyrethroids are. It's applied topically, not aerosolized into the air you're breathing. There have been very rare cases of respiratory issues from heavy inhalation, like if someone sprayed it directly in their face and breathed deeply. But in normal use, it's not in the same risk category. For someone with asthma who's concerned about airborne chemicals, a topical repellent is going to be much safer than running a vaporizer all night.
DEET has that reputation. It melts plastic. It feels greasy. It smells like a chemistry lab.
It does melt plastic, and that's actually a useful litmus test for whether a product contains real DEET. But the sensory experience is the main reason people look for alternatives. Picaridin is the main competitor, and it's what I'd recommend for someone who hates DEET. Developed by Bayer in the 1980s, it's odorless, non-greasy, doesn't dissolve your sunglasses, and has been shown to be just as effective as DEET at similar concentrations. Consumer Reports has rated 20% Picaridin sprays as their top pick for several years running. It's also safe for children and doesn't have the plastic melting property. The main downside is that it's slightly more expensive and can be harder to find in some markets.
What about the natural stuff? Citronella, lemon eucalyptus, all the things that smell like a spa but might actually do something?
Oil of lemon eucalyptus. And I need to be specific here because there's a distinction. OLE is an extract from the lemon eucalyptus tree, and it's the only plant-based repellent that the CDC lists as comparable to low-concentration DEET. It's not the same thing as lemon eucalyptus essential oil, which is much weaker. The active compound is called PMD, and products with 30% OLE can give you about 6 hours of protection, which is genuinely impressive. It's not recommended for children under 3 due to a lack of safety data, but for adults it's a solid option. The catch is, it's more expensive, and you need to reapply it more frequently than the label suggests if you're sweating. Citronella candles and torches are the outdoor entertaining equivalent of a security blanket. They make you feel protected, but the actual mosquito repellency is minimal. The smoke and the scent might confuse mosquitoes slightly in a very small radius, like directly above the candle. But if you're sitting 6 feet away on a breezy evening, you might as well be burning a regular candle. There was a study in the Journal of Vector Ecology that compared citronella candles to flame candles and found no significant difference in mosquito landings. The citronella industry is built on vibes.
Vibes and citronella. That could be the name of a very disappointing lifestyle brand.
It's the lo-fi hip-hop of mosquito control. Pleasant, inoffensive, accomplishes nothing.
Alright, so we've got screens, standing water management, DEET, or Picaridin on skin. What about the NITCOR thing Daniel mentioned?
NITCOR is primarily a flashlight and power bank company. They make really good gear. I've used their headlamps for years. The product Daniel's probably referring to is the NITCOR EMR series, which are portable electronic mosquito repellents. These don't use chemicals or UV light. They use a small heated pad that vaporizes a metafluthrin impregnated mat. Metafluthrin is a pyrethroid, so chemically it's in the same family as the plug-in vaporizers, but the delivery mechanism is different. It's battery-powered, portable, and creates a small personal protection zone rather than trying to treat a whole room.
It's still a pyrethroid. Doesn't that put it in the same asthma risk category?
It does, but the exposure profile is different. The NITCOR device is designed to be worn on a belt or placed on a table next to you outdoors. It's not meant for enclosed spaces. The metafluthrin concentration is lower than what you'd get from a room vaporizer, and because you're using it in open air, the respiratory exposure is dramatically reduced. For someone with asthma, using it outside on a balcony is probably fine. Using it in a closed bedroom all night, less so.
It's a personal force field, not a room treatment.
And the reviews on these are actually pretty good for what they are. They're not going to clear a backyard of mosquitoes, but if you're sitting at a cafe table or camping, they create a bubble of protection about 2 to 3 feet around the device. The limitation is that metafluthrin is volatile and the mats need to be replaced after about 4 to 6 hours of use, and they're not cheap. It's a niche product for a specific use case. Personal, portable, outdoor protection, not a replacement for home mosquito control.
If Daniel's friend is looking for something to use on a balcony or in the park, the NITCOR might make sense. If he's trying to keep his bedroom mosquito-free all night, it's the wrong tool.
And that's a broader point worth making. A lot of mosquito product disappointment comes from using the right product in the wrong context. The UV trap that does nothing in a backyard might actually catch some mosquitoes in a dark, enclosed garage with no competing light sources and no people around. Because in that scenario, the mosquitoes have nothing else to orient toward. But that's not how anyone actually uses them.
The product works great in the exact scenario nobody bought it for.
The mosquito control equivalent of a treadmill that's only effective if you live on a hill.
Alright, let's get practical. Daniel wants affordable, effective recommendations that won't trigger asthma or harm a kid. What does the shopping list look like?
Tier 1, the foundation. Fine mesh window screens, properly sealed. If you can't install permanent screens, there are adjustable magnetic screen doors and temporary window screens that attach with Velcro. They're cheap, they work, and they don't require landlord approval. A decent bed net is maybe $20 to $30, and if you get a permethrin-treated one, it adds an extra layer of chemical protection that's bound to the fabric, not floating in the air. Permethrin-treated nets have been the backbone of malaria prevention programs worldwide for decades, and the safety profile for children is well established because they've been used in millions of households.
Permethrin on fabric doesn't aerosolize the way a vaporizer does.
It's bonded to the fibers. You don't inhale it. The main caution is to keep treated fabrics away from cats because permethrin is highly toxic to felines before it dries. Once dry, it's stable. But that's a cat-specific warning, not a human respiratory concern.
Good to know. What about those fans with the mesh covers? The ones that claim to suck mosquitoes in?
Those are interesting. They're basically a fan with a fine mesh intake, sometimes with a UV light as a secondary attractant. The principle is that mosquitoes are weak flyers and a strong enough fan creates an airflow they can't escape. Some of these work surprisingly well. The key metric is airflow. You want something that moves a lot of cubic feet per minute. The better models can catch a meaningful number of mosquitoes in a room over several hours. They're completely chemical-free, no respiratory concerns whatsoever, and they're silent enough to sleep with. The downside is, they're not as effective as a properly screened window, and they don't help when you're sitting outside.
Any specific brands, or are they all basically the same?
The fan-based traps are largely commoditized at this point. The difference between a $40 model and a $100 model is mostly build quality and noise level, not catch rate. The important thing is to look for one with a removable collection tray you can clean and to place it correctly, low to the ground, in a dark corner, away from where people are sitting. The mosquitoes need to encounter the airflow before they encounter you.
The hierarchy is screens, then fan traps for indoor use, then topical repellents for skin, then portable devices like the Nycor for outdoor personal use, and the chemical vaporizers are a calculated risk that Daniel's probably right to avoid.
That's the framework. I'd add one more thing that's often overlooked, a good floor or pedestal fan, not a mosquito fan, just a regular fan pointed at you. Mosquitoes can't fly effectively in wind speeds above about 1 mile per hour. A strong fan creates a bubble of turbulent air that mosquitoes simply can't navigate. It's not killing them, but it's keeping them off you. And it's completely safe, zero chemicals, zero maintenance beyond cleaning the blades. For someone with asthma, this is probably the single most underrated mosquito defense tool available.
A regular fan. The mosquito control equivalent of building me a chair nobody notices they're sitting in.
It's so simple that people dismiss it. But there was a study in the Journal of Medical Entomology that tested this directly. A box fan reduced mosquito landings by about 65% compared to no fan. It's not perfect, but for a $20 device you already own, the return on investment is extraordinary.
Daniel's friend walks into a hardware store, sees the UV trap display, and the correct move is to walk past it, buy some window screen material, a pedestal fan, and a bottle of Picaridin.
Maybe a bucket to dump out standing water. That's the unglamorous, evidence-based mosquito control starter kit. The UV trap is like buying a metal detector to find your car keys. It's detecting something, just not the thing you actually want.
What about the bigger outdoor solutions? The CO2 traps? The propane-powered mosquito magnets?
Those are a different category entirely. The mosquito magnet and similar devices use propane to generate heat, moisture, and CO2, which actually does mimic a large mammal. They work. They can trap thousands of mosquitoes over a season. But they're expensive, typically $300 to $500. They require propane tank refills and regular maintenance, and they need to be placed strategically, usually upwind of the area you're trying to protect. For a single-family home with a yard, they can make a real difference. For an apartment balcony in Jerusalem,
they're still not 100%.
The goal with mosquito control is never elimination, it's reduction. You're trying to get the biting pressure below the threshold where it ruins your evening. A combination of screens, a fan, and a topical repellent will get you 90% of the way there for maybe $50 total. The remaining 10% requires exponentially more money and effort, and you'll never get to zero.
The Pareto principle of not getting eaten alive.
80% of the benefit from 20% of the spending. The trick is knowing which 20% to spend on.
All right, let's talk about Israel specifically for a second. The mosquito situation there. Is it different from what Daniel would have encountered in the U.S.?
The main difference is species and disease risk. Israel has several mosquito species, but the most common nuisance spider in urban areas is Culex pipiens, the common house mosquito. It breeds in stagnant water, it's most active at dusk and dawn, and it's primarily a nuisance rather than a major disease vector. Israel also has Aedes albopictus, the Asian tiger mosquito, which is more aggressive, bites during the day, and can transmit dengue and chikungunya, though locally acquired cases in Israel are rare. The Ministry of Health does monitor for West Nile virus, which is endemic in the region and transmitted by Culex mosquitoes, so it's not just about comfort, there's a legitimate health dimension. The long dry summer with occasional irrigation creates perfect mosquito breeding conditions. The mosquitoes are most active from May through October, peaking in July and August. The dry heat means a lot of people sleep with windows open because air conditioning is expensive, which makes screens even more critical. And the outdoor social culture, late dinners on balconies and in gardens, means people are exposed during peak mosquito activity hours.
The use case is different from, say, Minnesota, where you're mostly dealing with mosquitoes when you're hiking or camping, not when you're trying to eat dinner on your own balcony.
The balcony scenario is the hard one. Screens don't help because you're outside. A pedestal fan can work if you've got an outlet. Topical repellent works, but people don't want to slather themselves in DEET before dinner. The NeatCore-type portable device is actually well-suited to this exact scenario. Battery-powered, creates a small protection zone, no smell, no skin application.
Maybe Daniel's instinct about the NeatCore was correct for the specific context he's probably thinking about.
I think so. The NeatCore EMR06 or EMR10, those are the current models, run about $30 to $40. The replacement mats are maybe $10 for a pack of 20, and each mat lasts 4 to 6 hours. For someone who spends evenings on a balcony, that's a reasonable solution. The pyrethroid exposure is minimal outdoors, and the device is small enough to put on a table next to a kid without the kid handling it directly.
For indoor sleeping, kids' room, asthma in the house.
Bed net, window screen, floor fan. That's the trifecta. Zero chemicals, zero ongoing costs, zero respiratory concerns. If the kid is old enough, a picaridin-based lotion applied before bed adds another layer. Not a spray, you don't want to aerosolize it, but a lotion or wipe applied to exposed skin.
The bed net feels like a solution from another era. Is that actually practical for a modern apartment?
It depends on the apartment. If you've got a ceiling hook or a frame, they're fine. There are pop-up bed nets designed for travel that deploy in seconds and don't require any installation. They're basically a little tent for your bed. They're popular in Southeast Asia and work perfectly well. The aesthetic is definitely field hospital chic, but you're asleep, not hosting a dinner party.
Aesthetic is a consideration when you're an adult with a bedroom that doesn't look like a base camp.
But the alternative is waking up with mosquito bites and possibly West Nile virus. I'll take the base camp look.
All right, let's summarize the actual recommendations for Daniel's friend. What's the shopping list in order of priority?
Number 1. Window screens. If the apartment doesn't have them, install them or use temporary Velcro screens. This is the single highest impact intervention. Number 2. A good floor or pedestal fan. Point it at the bed or the seating area. Number 3. A topical repellent. Picaridin 20% is my top recommendation for someone with asthma and kids. Sawyer and Naturpel make good ones. DEET is fine too if you don't mind the texture. Number 4. For the balcony scenario specifically, the NeatCore EMR series is a solid choice. Battery-powered, portable, effective in a small radius outdoors. Number 5. A fan-based indoor trap if you want something running passively while you sleep. Not essential if you got screens, but a nice supplement.
What not to buy?
UV light traps without CO2 or chemical lures. Citronella. Anything as a primary defense. And the cheap plug-in liquid vaporizers if asthma is a concern. The risk probably outweighs the benefit in that specific household.
The UV trap industry must know their products don't work. How do they keep selling them?
Because they catch insects. That's the thing. They do catch bugs. Lots of them. The consumer sees a tray full of dead insects and feels satisfied. They don't have a microscope to identify the species. And the placebo effect is powerful. If you believe the trap is working, you might notice the mosquitoes less. The manufacturers are careful with their language too. They say attracts and traps flying insects, which is true. They just don't specify which insects.
The fine print doing a lot of heavy lifting.
As it always does. There's a whole category of consumer products that work primarily on the consumer, not on the problem. UV mosquito traps are the poster child for that category.
What about those ultrasonic repellent things? The little plug-in devices that emit a high-frequency sound?
There have been at least a dozen controlled studies on ultrasonic mosquito repellents, and not a single one has shown any significant effect on mosquito landing or biting rates. The Federal Trade Commission has actually charged several manufacturers with false advertising over these claims. They're in the same category as the UV traps, except they don't even catch moths. They do literally nothing except emit a faint whine that teenagers can hear.
The mosquito control market is basically a minefield of products that don't work, products that work but might harm you, and a few boring things that actually solve the problem.
That's most consumer markets, honestly. The boring stuff is almost always the answer. Screens, fans, repellent. It doesn't make for a satisfying unboxing video, but it makes for a summer without mosquito bites.
The unboxing video for a window screen would be deeply unfulfilling.
Here's the mesh. Here's the frame. It goes in the window. Thanks for watching. Like and subscribe.
All right, I think we've pretty thoroughly answered this. One last thing. Daniel mentioned he tested the Dynatrap in the US. Is there any regional difference that would make these things work better or worse in Israel versus the US?
The mosquito species are different, but the fundamental biology is the same. Culex pipiens in Israel and Culex pipiens in the US are the same species, same behavior, same lack of interest in UV light. If anything, the higher ambient light in Israeli summers, longer days, more outdoor lighting, would make a UV trap even less effective because there's more competition for the mosquito's limited visual attention. These traps work best in complete darkness, which is rarely the scenario where people are getting bitten.
Moving the Dynatrap to Israel wouldn't have magically fixed it.
It would have been equally useless, just with a better view.
The Dynatrap, now available in Holy Land beige.
I don't think that's a real color.
It should be. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1600s, Japanese scholars in Hokkaido proposed that fossilized leaves found in coal seams were not the remains of plants, but rather stone embryos, mineral formations that had attempted to grow into living things and failed, frozen mid-development by a deficiency of vital earth spirit. This theory was taught in regional academies for nearly 40 years before Dutch traders introduced actual paleobotany texts.
So coal was just a really tragic nursery.
The vital earth spirit deficiency diagnosis. This has been My Weird Props. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. We'll be back soon with more questions and more deeply impractical answers. See you then.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.